श्रीला गुरुदेव की जय, श्रीमन महाप्रभु की जय, श्री हरि नाम संकीर्तन की जय, श्री श्री गौर नित्यानंद की जय, श्री गौर गदाधर जी की जय, श्री श्री धवजी गोपाल की जय, श्री श्री गौराद माधव की जय, गौर भक्त वृंद की जय, गौर प्रेमानंद हरि Good morning. Welcome, Pranam. Is there another chair? We have one more, right? There is a third chair there? Yeah. No, it's okay. There's one coming, so you can... I'll take you out of your comfort zone, but not in that sense. So you sit as comfortable as you can, and from there we'll try to... move out to the realm of the unknown, and so on. So, welcome. And today we are continuing with our series of lectures on Trinam in our Japa retreat, trying to go deeper in our, not only chanting of the name, but also in our conception of what's the name. No? And specifically today we will try to focus in that direction, because that's a very important point, not only how do I engage in meditation on the names of God, but what's the name of God. And the more that's clear for us, probably the more we will approach such a reality with proper regard, with proper consciousness, basically. So yesterday we gave an introduction about speaking about why the need of retreats. I hope your homework was successful. Mine was, I think so. And also we shared some of our objectives in getting together here and our hopes in going through this community experience, if you will, with Trinam in the center our lives. And even before that, we had the blessings of Sri Baladev Prabhu on his appearance day, like inaugurating this session by manifesting his strength, as it especially comes to our lives also in the form of Sri Guru. And interestingly, also as I mentioned yesterday, we were celebrating Srila Prabhupada's starting his journey from India to the West. So interestingly, we started somehow our journey yesterday, and our journey starts because of his journey started. So somehow we try to express some gratitude and indebtedness to such a figure who will be the one again appearing at the very end of our retreat on his appearance day. That will be the official last day in one sense of the retreat. So in that sense we are like surrounded by the great mercy of Srila Prabhupada and other personalities from beginning to end of our retreat. And today I'd like to, as I mentioned, to after our introduction and all these blessings collected and required, to continue today's meeting speaking about the ontology of Trinam. Trinam is the holy name, and the ontology refers to the actual position, an inner position, inner situation of any given person or substance or whatever. So when we say the glorious ontology of Trinam Prabhu, means who Trinam Prabhu is, no? I mean, just by saying Prabhu, I'm indicating and giving you a hint of that, no? Which is, again, we'll see, it's a very unique, interesting conception that we entertain in our particular school. What's the identity of the name of God, and so on. So, of course, in some successive meetings in these days, we will be addressing also different considerations as to how to practice the chanting, or how to conceive the practice, and how to address prayer, spirit, and so many other things in practice, no? That sometimes we call abhidheya. And proper abhidheya or practice will take us to prayojan or proper goal. But also important to know sambandha. Sambandha means the knowledge of what is what in the words of our Guru Maharaj's conceptual orientation. Know where we are in relation to the thing we are trying to address, and what's that thing or that person, and who we are in connection to him and her, and so on. So we have Sambandha, Videya, Prayojan. All this can be applied to Srinam. So we have Nam Sambandha, Nama Videya, Nam Prayojan. What's the goal of Nam? What's the practice of Nam? What's the understanding and identity, if you will, of Nam? So today we'll focus more on this thesis-like side, and then we'll go to the praxis, no? From theory to practice. What's the Nam? What's the identity of the name? Because if we speak this part, probably our attempts, our practical attempts, will prove insufficient or lacking, as it happens generally if you try to engage in something without knowing what that something is in any given realm, especially in spiritual life. If we don't have a clear idea of what we are supposed to be doing, what's the goal of this and all that, when we try to do something, if there is no proper identity of who we are, what's the other thing on the other side, as Guru Maharaj will say, who I am, who is asking the question, what's out there, it may be proved lacking. So Sambandha is very crucial to our Abhideya. My Guru Maharaj would like to say, actually Abhideya is the natural outcome of Sambandha. Because if you receive proper knowledge about who is who and what's the relationship of everything, the natural expression of that knowledge received will be to behave in such a way that we call bhakti. So one way of describing bhakti as a lifestyle, as a practical daily affair, is just the byproduct of having received Sambandha, having been informed who is Krishna, who I am, what's the world, what's the interaction between energetic source and energies. When that's clear, naturally, when I conduct myself in practice, that orientation will crucially affect how do I move in life, my whole lifestyle. And that will take you a prayojan, a certain goal. So yesterday we spoke about community, common unity, and this idea of Sambandha goes hand by hand. Bandha, the other day we spoke about Raksha Bandhana. So Sambandha, Bandha means bonded or linked, and Sam means everything. So the knowledge that shows us how everything is connected with the common source, that's Sambandha. The type of education that shows us there is unity, non-dual unity in reality. So Nam Sambandha, in this case, if Sambandha means that, Nam Sambandha has to do with that common source that we have, but in the form of Nam. Our common universal source is a name, if you want to put it like that. Takes the form of a particular name. Too risky there? Maybe the cat will. Let's try. No risk, no gain. On some level of the practice is like that. So Nam Sambandha has to do with, who is our source and how that source appears in the form of its own name, interestingly. How everything is not only merely connected with our divine source, but actually, as we will see, how everything in some way exists inside of it. That's a very unique conception about the name of God. We will see how a way of conceiving is everything is inside the name. Mahaprabhu will say what? Nam nam akari bahuda nija sarva shaktis. So all the potencies of God are in His name. So we are one of those potencies. In one sense, the world is one of those potencies. And of course, Swarup Shakti is there. So we could argue that everything in one sense is inside of Him, inside the name. Now, instead of the name is entering inside of me, I'm inside it. That's an interesting change of shift of perspective. Paradigm shift. No, and it will help us. We will see many ways of presenting the same idea regarding I'm not the chanter. I'm not the one who takes the name, introduces the name, pronounces the name, the main character, spotlight on me, this type of ego, if you will. But actually, I'm inside that. No? Basically. No? Bhaktivinoda Thakur says something similar in his, what's the song? Arunodai Kirtan, Nam Bina Kitu Nahiko R, he says. Chodha Bhubana Majji. He says, Outside of the name, there is nothing in this whole creation. Outside of Srinam, nothing, everything. In other words, if nothing is outside of the name, everything is inside of the name. Basically, that's it. The conclusion. So that's, to begin with, an interesting meditation. Everything is inside of the name, me included. Because the name, as we will see, is none different from Bhagavan. And that's a point that probably most of you have heard 108 times, so now comes the 109. And it's simple, as it may sound, and maybe probably as difficult as maybe to realize, and as deep as it is, we should begin our exposition today with this important point, very unique point, at least in our legacy, in our tradition, which is the name of God is none different from Him. It's simple, but it's not so simple. Generally, the simple truths, the simplest truths are not so simple to digest, because we are not so simple. We are very complicated. So like once someone said, no, to be, how would they say it? To be happy is simple, but to be simple is not so easy. Something like that. Somehow we are trying to simplify ourselves in one sense, become more substantial. And there's complexity in the simplification process, no? Integration of complexity, as we would like to say. No? And ultimately, that takes the form of simplicity. But there's too much complexity harmonized there. No? First and second naivete, as we will say sometimes. So, the name of God is non-different from Him. No? Abhina Sarup is another way of putting it. Abhina means non-different. And Sarup has to do with an identity. So it's a non-different identity, Nam and Nami. Nam is the name, Nami is the named, or the possessor of the name. So we receive this idea that Sri Krishna, the name of Krishna, if you want to put it like that, has two swarups, or two sides to his personality, Bachyam and Bachakam. So Bachyam means the named, and Bachakam means the name. But the named and the name are two aspects of the name, if you will, because they are not different, if you want to make that point from different perspectives. This is what Sriman Mahaprabhu himself established when someone asked him, could you please give me a definition of the name of Krishna? What's the name? And Mahaprabhu say, Tamala Shamala Tvishi Sri Yashodas Tanandaye Krishna Namno Rudhiriti Sarva Shastra Vinirnaya. Which means, remember, the question was, what's the name of Krishna? And he said, the name of Krishna is Tamala Shamala Tuishi. It's he who is of the hue of a dark tamal tree. Which is, of course, we know who he is. Sri Yashoda Stanandaye. He who is suckling the breast of Yashoda. That's the name. Krishna Namno Rudhiriti. That's the main meaning of the name of Krishna, and that's established throughout the whole Shastra, all scriptural corpus. So that was Mahaprabhu's reply. What's the name of Krishna? He was Tamal. He's Tamal Krishna. He has that type of hue. He suckles the breast of, in other words, he's Krishna. So it's simple, but it's the deepest possible reply you can give. What's the name of Krishna? You say Krishna. That simple? Yeah, of course we need to understand the background of that simple reply. But the idea is, now the name of Bhagavan belongs to Bhagavan's own constitutional nature, to his own swarup. The name of Bhagavan represents the very essence of Bhagavan. And therefore, if the name of Bhagavan is non different from his internal nature, it's naturally the name will cause absorption in him. Because the name of Krishna represents Krishna's internal nature. So if we contact the name of God, naturally we will experience some form of absorption with Him, in Him. Of course, we all speak these days why sometimes the absorption is not coming. But the point is the potential is there. No? The elements are there. The name of God is such that if we approach it in proper way, naturally, it has to create absorption because it's God's innermost nature expressed in that particular form. Mm-hmm. There are many verses about the identity or the ontology of Srinam. We will be sharing today a few ones. So another one that Rupa Goswami also quotes from the Puranas, famous one, Nam Chintamani is Krishna's Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha. Purna Suddha Nitya Mukta Vina Tvam Namanaminu. Abhinna, again, Abhinna Saru. So the name of Krishna is like a touchstone, Chintamani, Nam Chintamani, Krishna's Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha is totally conscious, is the source of all rasa. Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha is the form, personification of all divine mellow. Purna Sutta Nitya Mukta is complete, is pure, is eternally liberated. And why all this? Because Avinatvam Namanamino, because between the name and the named, there's no difference. So all the things that apply to Krishna immediately apply to his name. Krishna is Purna Sutta Nitya Mukta, and so many things. The name is as well. So it's important for those who want to thread this particular path to develop the faith that this is a fact. No, it's not that these verses are like an exaggeration. We will in some classes analyze the Nam Aparat, and one of them is to consider that some statements in Shastra about the name are an exaggeration. While in Shastra we will find exaggeration in certain sections to promote whatever particular inferior goals, and you need the audience to become a little bit fired up about that, so you need to stretch a little bit. Oh yeah, by doing that you will attain that. And actually, you won't attain that, but you do it. So there is a place for this called arthavad, you know, some stretching of the language to promote something. But the point is, when Shastra speaks about Srinam, it's offensive to think there is an exaggeration there. There's never actually exaggeration. Actually, we can never say enough about the glories of Srinam, Ikshatena Shabda. So it's important that we develop proper Shraddha, proper faith, a Prakrit Shraddha, in this potency and glories of the name. In the Achintya Shakti. Remember, Bhagavan has Shakti. Achintya Shakti means potencies that can make the impossible possible. So in our case, it seems impossible that my heart, my stone-like heart, may melt like ghee. You require Achintya Shakti for that to happen. You require miracle. So miracle happens when Achintya Shakti comes onto the scene. And the name of Krishna is no different from Krishna. Therefore, it's Shaktimam and has all Shaktis. One of them, Achintya Shakti, which can make the impossible possible. So that's our hope. No? So it's important that we develop some faith. As sometimes say, we have to develop a prakrit shraddha or transmundane faith in the Achintya Shakti of Srinam, in the inconceivable potencies of the name of God. To the point that we can conclude, I don't need anything else apart from it. At least in theory, I know that and I'm building my faith in that direction. That's our conviction, and that's the result that has been experienced by many great personalities who took shelter in the name and everything was there. Of course, in the beginning we cannot just imitate that, as my Guru Maharaj once was given a lecture and he was explaining different aspects of our philosophy and someone raised their hands and said, but why are you explaining all these things? We just chant and be happy. Why the need for hearing all these topics? Why just not chant and be happy? Why don't you say chant and be happy and conclude your lecture there? And we start chanting and then prasad. Why prasad? Only chant and be happy. And my guru said, but can you do that? Can you only chant 24 hours a day and be happy without the need of doing so many things that you still are doing? And of course the person said, well, their hand was like this and started like to disappear, no? So that's why we say so many other things, but all of them will conclude and converge in this chant and be happy, if you will. Everything is in the name. Nothing is outside of the name. We are in the name, and so on. All of our perfection, guna, rupa, lila, everything is contained there. So we should keep that type of faith, that type of focus. So although we may need so many other things to complement our project, we should have that clear in our mind. Everything is in this little bag, no? That we have sometimes. The famous story is when someone approached Sri Gorkhishordas Babaji and he was asked, can you reveal me my Siddha Deha? Can you reveal my spiritual identity in the Leela? And Sri Gorkhishor said, that information is contained between the syllables of the holy name. That was his reply. Bas. Bye. Between the, in the sense, try to find yourself and your ultimate potential in the, through the exercise of chanting. And Krishna will reveal that. The name has a chintya shakti. And the name can reveal everything you need. So even some practitioners who slightly differ from us and who will like make lots of emphasis in things like Siddha Pranali, and that you have to receive some more specific details and information about your idea. They even say, will say, but if you have Aprakrit Shraddha in the Chintya Shakti of the name, full faith in the inconceivable potency, everything will come from that. Mm. So there's place for that. That's my point. Mm. So Mahamantra is a Siddha mantra. All perfection will come from that. All the reveal, the remaining details, if you will, even about Krishna, Nam, Rupa, Guna, Lila, Krishna's form, qualities, pastimes, associates, parikar, all that will come by proper relationship with the name. That's a nice way to put it. I mean, sometimes we may wonder, where is my relationship with Krishna at the present moment? So, again, simple way to do it is, pay attention, where is your relationship with the name? Because they are non different. And as we will speak today also, it's a relationship. Again, try to... I think that that idea will help us a lot in our chanting. Because chanting, again, is just other way of saying developing a relationship. Again, generally you may not develop a relationship with people by chanting, if you will. At least that's how we think about that. But that's why we need all this type of sambandha to understand this apparently outward situation. I'm relating, developing a loving link with someone by chanting, but the chanting is not different from the person, and the person is inviting you to a relationship, and so on. So Nam Chintamani, Krishna says this verse. Chintamani, that's a very nice word, but a very delicate one. How do you say in English? Like this razor's blade, that you can do the two things. Prabhupada will say that even, no? He said Krishna consciousness is like a razor's blade.
Edge.
With through which you can shave your face nicely, as I may have to do in a few weeks, let's see. And, or you can basically, how do you say, defigurate? No, do you have that word in English? Desfigurarse? Disfigurate? No? With the same thing. And once, so, Nam is Chintamani. Remember, Chintamani. Mani means like jewel, and Chinta has to do with thought. So whatever you think, that comes to pass. So the point is nice, but be careful. Because you have to have a precise idea in your mind, some substantial wish in your heart while you are handling this, if you will, magical touchstone. It's like a magical object. It has a great potential, but you have to know how to deal with that. How to, not to become neurotic or afraid, but just to be properly aware. If something is very valuable, has lots of potential, you can use something in the wrong direction, and that great potential will create something not so beautiful. As we spoke the other day, one of the best ways to see how bright and beautiful potential we have in the higher directions is to pay attention how much potential do we have in the lowest directions into the darkness, and how much capacity we have to do a total mess in our lives. That indirectly showing how much potential we have in the other direction if we will just use that energy in the proper way. So in this way, Chintamani may, if it's not properly handled, may just be a tool for fulfilling material desires or projections that will be like just wandering in one's own mind at the moment, and you take the Chintamani for that. So we should consider what's possible. what can be possibly attainable through this Chintamani? And of course, the conclusion is everything. So then you have to choose wisely. Okay, but among all these other, these unlimited options that I can attain through Chintamani, what I'm going for? No? What's my attention and consistency invested in while taking, handling Chintamani, if you will? No? So again, that's a way of remaining aware how much power is there. Another nice verse that Sri Rupa quotes also from the Purana Sata, Sri Krishna Namadi. Now with Grayam Indriyeshi Bonmukhehi Jivado Swayami Vashkuratida. Which says that another way of saying the same thing. The name of Krishna is non-material. The name, form, qualities of Krishna are all non-material, transcendental. And they are way beyond the reach of the senses. So of course the next question is, so what I'm doing here with my tongue, trying to chant the name of Krishna, if it's beyond my tongue. But then he says, Sibon mukhi jivado, jivado. But when we have proper attitude, seva on mukhe, seva attitude of service, the name of Krishna chooses to reveal through those same things that are otherwise obstacles, the senses. The senses generally I describe as obstacles to the real seeing and the real perceiving of reality. But with proper attitude, the senses will become facilitators, not obstacles. So that's the, what's in between the two? Krishna Seva, Seva Unmukhi, the attitude of service. But again, that's a point to make. Krishna and his name are Adokshaya. They lie way beyond the reach of mind and senses. Something totally spiritual. Which again, it's important to pound the post because generally we are accustomed, names and forms are, as Kumaraj will say, here today, gone tomorrow. So the point is, if the name of Krishna is fully spiritual, I can only contact something fully spiritual through something fully spiritual. So I have to spiritualize my senses, and for that I need the fully spiritual reality to descend, show her their grace on me, and gradually that may invoke what we call the spiritualization of our body and our senses, which all begins with our gross senses, especially with our tongue. By the grace of the name of God, the tongue starts to, as the scriptures say, if you control the tongue, you control all the senses, basically. If you don't control the tongue, good luck with all the senses. And the tongue can be controlled in two ways, of course, by using it to honor Mahaprasad, but also to invoke proper divine sound in form of Srinam Harikata. So that's why Rupa Goswami begins Vacho Vegan. It all concludes in the glories of Sri Radha and Radha Kunda in 11 verses, but it begins saying, control your tongue. Which doesn't mean just make a knot there and repress yourself, but engage your functions in connection to the divine. And therefore, spiritualization will come. Dikshakali bhaktakari atma samarpana. The moment of initiation, Chaitanya Charitamrita says, Sri Guru is giving mantra, and the process of, as Christianity will say, transubstantiation of matter will begin. And from a material conception of body, we will gradually turn to a spiritual body, spiritualized body. So you cannot chant Srinam with material senses. That's an important point to make. So I need to enter into another dimension of even conceiving myself before chanting. That's why many devotees, so when they enter the altar, there is, before entering, there is this filter, if you will, called Bhuta Shuddhi, which means like it's purification of one's sense of being. Because I cannot relate to the divine if I do not become divine myself, the Vedas say. You cannot approach God if you don't become God-like. So at least you have to start by reminding yourself who you actually are. Because probably we may forget during the day who we actually are, all that we can be. And generally Vaishnavas, before worshipping Srimurti, may invoke mantras like, I don't know, Naham vipro na cha narapatin na pi vaishnasudro naham burnina cha agrihapatin vanas tuyutilva. Kintu prodham nikila paramananda purnamrita der gopi bhartu padakamalayor dasa dasa nadas. Mahaprabhu will say, I'm not Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaisya, Sudra, I'm not Sannyasi, Vanaprastha, Grihastha, Brahmachari. Nehi, 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 neti, neti, neti. But then comes the positive part. Gopi bhartu padakamalayor dasa dasa nadas. But I'm something. I'm the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant of Sri Krishna, the beloved of the gopikas. So it's a way of reminding us who I am, or what do I want to go to be, and where I want to go. So before chanting, one may also invoke this type of verses, you know, to remind ourselves. I have to relate with something divine. I have to remind myself of my divine nature, my divine prospect. I'm approaching Murti, I'm approaching Srinam. These are different ways of speaking about the Absolute. Sri Diti is none different from Hari, Bhagavan. Bhagavatam is none different from Bhagavan. Srinam is none different from Bhagavan. So many ways in which the Absolute is reaching us. So the idea is, if we really have a sincere desire of chanting Trinam, Trinam will spiritualize the tongue. So Srinam can descend there. First the tongue will be spiritual, and then Sri Krishna will enter the tongue and start dancing there. One devotee once described the chanting like that. He said, chanting is not chanting. Chanting is Krishna dancing in your tongue. In the form of Srinam. But the tongue has to become a spiritualized stage before the actors come in. Because the actors are fully transcendent. So anyhow, different ways of trying to make this idea of the name of God is none different from God. In the West, this is called onomatodoxy. So in the West also this is entertained. It's not just our own idea that we are coming from. But in the West there are different doctrines in when they conceive the name of God is identical with Him. So in the West that's called onomatodoxy. Now, we make a difference on top of that. No? Till now we make this case, the name of God is non-different from Him. It's, we call it absolute sound. We have relative sound and absolute sound. Relative sound means the sound is different from the object that the sound represents. So if this glass will be empty and I will require water, I may invoke the sound water. But the sound water will be just to call for the element water. It's not just by saying water, it's like, okay, satisfy. And when I'm thirsty, water, so refreshing. I need the element water. So the point is, between the sound water and the element water, there is a gap. That means relative sound. But absolute sound means when I invoke the sound is not different from that which the sound is pointing to. Like when I say Krishna, as we will see, He's already there. So that's the difference. No? So we will not only say Srinam is absolute sound, the name is not different from God, but we go one step further beyond that and we will make the case for the name of God is more generous than God Himself. This is a very unique Gaudiya contribution coming through Mahaprabhu and his associates. No? The name of God is God Himself, but in a very uniquely generous disposition, extending Himself to certain corners where He, in His form, not as His name, is not reaching that far. So, this is a very important point. Rupa Goswami makes that point in his Namastapam. He makes the point that, okay, Nam and Nami are not different, but if we want to make a difference, we love to make differences. Okay, there's place for that. The name is more generous than the name. There you have the difference. On the basis of the non-difference. So, that's a very unique idea. In some traditions, God doesn't have a name. Some people will think God cannot have a name. If you put a name, you're limiting Him, as we said the other day. If you say He has a form, you're limiting Him. If you say anything about Him, you're limiting Him. Although they are limiting Him by saying that. But some people will say God cannot have a name, because we will limit that. Of course, for us, God has a name, and not only has one name, but has unlimited names. Nam, Nam, Akari, Bahuda, Mahaprabhu says. Bahuda means 1,000 for Mahaprabhu means asankhya, uncountable, unlimited. Because every name of God speaks about, or the main names, as we will see, of God speak about his relationship with his devotees. And he has unlimited devotees. And as we said the other day, the unique relationship of every devotee is unique. So there has to be a unique name to indicate that, if you will. Or it will be that particular name, which may be the same for many, will be invoked in a unique way. In that sense, there are unlimited names. Even if we speak about only the name of Krishna, there are unlimited names of Krishna because there are unlimited versions of invoking it through different hearts. So some people say God cannot have a name. Some people say, yes, he has one. This is the only one. And we just happen to belong to that school who is the lucky one, who has the only real legal version of God and legal name. So better you join us, because if not, eternal flames are waiting for you. That's not our idea. We will say God has a name, but not only one, but has unlimited names. And we go even beyond that to say, and he's identical with those names. And we were on top of that and say, even those names are higher, at least some of them higher than the names. No? So that's like on top, from the idea of God cannot have a name in spiritual circles, something like that. You are limiting God, so he can't have a name, so the name is even higher than God. It's God in his highest expression, so way big. How do you say it? Big?
Spring.
Leap, bridge between one and the other. So the name is calling, helping us to capture the Absolute in a way that we may not do it otherwise. No? Sometimes the example is, you may be walking in the street and some famous person is walking by, but you don't notice the person. Of course, the person doesn't notice you, but you don't notice the person either. But someone will tell you, have you seen? And the name comes, that person. Oh, and then immediately you become attentive. So the name is more influential than the person itself. The person was so famous walking around you, but you didn't notice. The name came, oh, that's the person. And of course, one of the six attributes of Krishna is he's supremely famous. So he's the most famous person, actually. And he's walking around us, but we may have not noticed him from time without beginning. So the name is coming for us to, oh, become aware of that fame, famous person. And that's the very idea of kirtan. Kirtan comes from the root kirti, which means fame. So kirtan has to do with realizing the most famous and expanding that fame, that reputation to begin with inside of us, and then overflowing and as a natural product sprinkling others. So the name, again, is more generous. That's a very unique idea. Mahaprabhu brought that idea, and that's why he's also the most generous, among other reasons. So why the name is more generous? If someone is very generous, if any person is known as the most generous, like Mahaprabhu is, for example, he's known as Mahavadanya Avatar, the most magnanimous personality. So why he's the most magnanimous personality? Because he's giving something. Of course, to someone who does not deserve that, as we mentioned always, but he's giving something. He has some fortune himself, which he has received or experienced, that he's extending to others. And that way he's generous. Because if you don't have anything to give, how you can be known as generous? What are you giving to be called as such? So we say that the name of Krishna is more generous than Krishna. So why? Because the name of Krishna, again, to be generous, you have to be fortunate before. And you then share that fortune. So the name of Krishna is more fortunate than Krishna himself. It's a giver of greater fortune. And how we can explain that? There are very many ways, but one of them that comes to mind is a very nice pastime, Lila, between Shishirada and Krishna, generally depicted in, while explaining some series of verses of Srila Raghunath Das Goswami's Vilap Kusumanjali. And in one moment, Sri Krishna, our God, is putting his head to the ground, inclined at the feet of Sri Radha. And that's the God we worship, the Hipada Palavam Udharam, the God that Srila Prabhupada will say. Everyone teaches us God is the most worshipable object, but we go a step further and try to teach who is the worshipable object of God. Is God worshipping someone? And the answer is yes. He's worshipping love. He's eternally worshipped. That's his own prayojan. For us, love is prayojan. For Krishna, love is prayojan. No? The goal of life. To attain, and once you attained, to keep attaining. Because there is no end. You can never fully capture that. Prati param purna amrita shradhanam, says Mahaprabhu. In eternity, at each step, there is eternal relishing of nectar. So Krishna, my point, is at the feet of Radha. And Radha is giving orders to him. He's in Bhamya Bhav. She's in Bhamya Bhav, like in left wing mood. Like ordering, telling Krishna what to do. So she says, paint my feet, decorate my feet with, how do you say, lakh in English? Lakh, alta, lakh, anyhow. Sorry?
Nail
polish?
No. Lakh? Nail
polish. Whatever, yeah. So Krishna is seeing this lakh. Taking darshan, Sri Radha, Pada darshan. And he's thinking, oh, I'm not so fortunate as this lakh. Because this lakh can stick on the feet of Sri Radha for the whole day. And I cannot do that. I would like to remain eternally at her feet, serving those feet. So what to do? How can I remain eternally at her feet? So Krishna, as we know, is very smart. So very quickly he reminds the different verse in Shastra, Abhinatam Namanamino. Oh, my name, me and my name are not different. So let my name stay in the foot soles of Sri Radha. So he takes this lakh and he begins to write his own name. Krishna Asham Sham 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 in the foot soles of Sri Radha. And starts to become overwhelmed by seeing the beauty of himself, like a mirror, no? Like seeing his own reflection in the form of the name, no? Attached to Sri Radha's feet forever. No? So he concludes, my name is more fortunate than me. No? So that's why the name is more generous, no? Because it's first to begin to be more generous. First you have to be more fortunate, and then you can share that fortune to others. In that sense, we can make the case the name of Krishna is not only more fortunate than Krishna, but more generous than Krishna. So you can see the deep confidential background. Of course, Krishna, after doing that, he starts to tremble and he cannot even continue the art. So Sri Radha will say, this boy doesn't know how to decorate, so get a group of manjari, come and you decorate that. And Krishna is thrown on the side, trembling, fainting in ecstasy, but he got what he wanted. No? His name is there. So he's there in the most substantial way. That's the point. So again, Krishna is not different from his name. We should never get tired of going through this. No, sometimes we hear these two expressions of the dative and the vocative. No, so when you call someone else, that's one thing. Like when invoking diksha mantras, are you saying to Krishna, Krishnasya, or Krishnaya? And so on. But in the case of chanting Srinam or the name of Krishna, as we say the other day, no? I mean, generally you call someone because the person is not here with you. No? If I tell you call Lisa, that implies that she's not here. But if I tell you, Kishore, can you call Lisa? He won't look at Lisa and say, Lisa. He will look at me and say, Maharaj, what are you talking about? She's there. Oh, sorry. So generally, my point is, we call someone that is not with us. But since the name of Krishna is not different from Krishna, it's not that you are calling, in one sense, Krishna. We conceive Krishna. It's a way, sometimes we have heard that, as you have said yesterday, it's a call to Krishna. But also it's important to understand, Krishna's already there in his name. You follow? Because sometimes we may chant the name thinking Krishna is, I don't know, over there behind the cloud or whatever. But he himself is Ganeshyam. He already is a cloud, so he's not beyond a cloud or anything. But he's not far away. He's more present than ever in his name, in his most fortunate, most generous disposition. So my point is, even before I finish the whole recital of the mantra, he's already there. No, before I finish the first half of the syllable, he's already there.
Invocative.
Sorry?
Instead of vocative, it's invocative.
Invocative, yeah. So that's how it works, actually. No? And it's important to become aware of that. No? Because if not, we ourselves are like setting the stage for conducting the interaction in a certain way. So if you start your chanting by conceiving the person I will call is really far, okay, that's your choice. And you will probably feel like that. I'll probably feel he's never coming, he's not replying. And Krishna like, I'm already there from day one, from day minus five. Before even you started doing that, I'm there. And so on. So in that sense, we could say that we are chanting the name of Krishna. It's not calling Krishna, technically speaking, because Krishna is not different from the call, which is not the same with any of us. Again, for calling any of us, is you have to call. You have to ask for water to have the water. But in Krishna, the call is the called, if you will, no? The name is the named. So in this case, the call is the person. So again, this requires a little bit of paradigm shift and to develop different way of thinking about what we are doing. Because again, we may just carry on with our samskaras about how we are accustomed to conducting life while calling someone, we're conceiving what's the meaning of a name of something, and we may just like project that into chanting Srinam, but with Krishna and his name, a whole set of different rules apply and laws. And that's why I'm making this class today and torturing you with this point and not going to a second point but just non-different from his name. So instead of calling Krishna, we could say we are trying, as we spoke that in the car when we were coming, I remember that Bhakti Rasa made the point that we are trying to be good hosts now, because he's already coming as the name. So how I'm hosting, how am I developing my hosting capacity to receive such an honorable guest? There's a lot of hosting culture in India. Now they have this famous quote, Atithi Devo Bhavam, which means especially an uninvited guest is to be treated as God himself. Especially if he's uninvited. No? We could say that Krishna is uninvited in the sense that he's already there. So you don't need to invite him. He's there. Or in the sense that even if you don't invite him, he will come, taking you by surprise in the least expected way. He's a very highly unexpected guest, no? To the point that we may not be able to recognize that the guest is there. We may fail in our hosting service. So we have to increase what we call atithi seva. Atithi means, again, like hosting the guests, basically. No? Atithi seva, service to the guests. So that's another way of putting what we are trying to do with we chanting. We are trying to become aware someone has come, someone is already there, and that someone is not someone, it's the one, if you will, or the two in this case. And they already came, they are there, what I'm supposed to do as a servant. So they are already there. Maybe we are not there. Krishna is already there in the name, but where are we? That's the main point. We'll try, of course, to mostly speak about that these days. That's why we may not feel Krishna there. Not because he's not there, but because we are somewhere else, probably. But when we become aware how much he's there, that means we are there. We are there when we become aware how he's there. The more we concentrate on this point, how Krishna is present in his name, to which degree, more than any other form, apart from his name, then we will start to have an experience proper. And in that way, we'll start to advance in our again, relationship with Bhagavan in the form of his name. It's nice to conceive the day, every day of chanting in this way. Every day in our life is in part a day of chanting, if you want to put it like that, a day of prayer, a day of japa, kirtan. And also it's a day in which I can advance progress in my relationship with Radha and Krishna, with Auji Gopal, and so on. No? So that's the idea. They are synonym. Synonym?
Synonymous.
I will never learn that one. So it's important we conceive this idea. My chanting is my relationship. No? When I'm sitting to chant, I'm paying attention to how I can increase my loving interaction with God in the form of his name. And a relationship needs constant nourishing and developing. It's not that just like, okay, we fell in love on day one, and that day one falling in love helps, keeps the momentum forever, and we don't need to do anything for each other, and we love each other. Remember the first day, it won't happen like that. No? After the second week, you have to start to get more resources. You cannot just say, my beloved, remember that first day when I told you that and I broke the roses? And we can just keep on with that day forever. Is that not enough? No, not enough. It has to continue growing. And that happens even in transcendence. It's not that Radha and Krishna have pure love for each other, so there's no need to increase the love. It's pure from beginning, so no need to keep working on that. It's not the work, that's the point. For them, it's not the, okay, let's go work again. No, it's not. That's the point, no? When we want to love someone, we want to develop that relationship. It's not that you feel it's like entering work and putting the card, okay, another day, another day, another day. That's what we don't want to do, addressing the name, no? Because everything, the thing that has the potential to become most loving, spontaneous, revealing, can become the most mechanized and boring and cold-hearted possible. That can happen. No? The chanting can be totally relegated to something, to a background noise, no? While you are doing three more things at the same time. We'll be speaking about that in our next classes, how to not chant the name. Sometimes it's helpful to begin in that level of description and then how to chant. Like when Eric Fromm was describing in The Art of Loving, what's love? But he begins with a long list of what love is not. And that's a long list. So if you survive that list and you accepted the construction process that comes there, you are ready to now start to learn what's love. So again, chanting is developing my relationship, my loving relationship with the divine in the form of his name, the most generous, fortunate, empowered, and loving extension of God in my life. And the holy names enters into a relationship with everyone who utters the name even once. That's the generosity of the name. The name is not waiting like, okay, after 10 years we kind of start to acknowledge that we have a bond. Now we are just casually meeting, so we cannot call, don't tell to your parents that we have a relationship. No. But Trinami say, oh, he say Krishna, he say Ram. Oh, okay, he was speaking in Spanish, referring to one branch in the tree, and he say Rama. No. Nama Bahas. Okay, let's begin the whole thing. Somehow he called me sometimes. So that's the how the name is overflowing and vibrating with generosity and eagerness to relate and love and extend. So the point is, becoming aware of the eagerness of that part, we should become eager in our side, no? And pay the price in coins of greed. Tatra laulyam api kalam moulyam. Rupa Goswami said, you want to enter the higher domains, okay, then first you have to know what's the currency. Even before asking how much do I have to pay, first you have to know what's the currency. And then how much to pay. But first, which is the currency I will be using there? He said, laulyam, that's greed or eagerness for that. And understand, there's so much on the other side trying to extend to me, so it's my turn now. So we can think meditate in this way. No, we are, when we are chanting, we are having kind of, if you want to put it, like a date with Radha and Krishna, if you will, with Bhagavan. No? If you have a date with someone, you prepare for that, generally. It's just like you go and I don't care for anything. And you try to focus and prepare and decorate. And sometimes we do the same before chanting. No? We may do Achaman, we may do Bhuta Sudhi, as I say, some meditation that helps us to understand who I am, what's my real identity. I'm Tilak. Some serious activities that you do to prepare to our morning date with japa, if you want to put it like that. A very adventurous date, a very long expedition, if you will. A very crooked relationship will be, no? Will be unexpected in that sense. No? So you have to be, that's why we put Tilak. No? Also we can conceive, I put Tilak, sometimes it's conceived like invoking the names of God in different parts of my body to be protected, because I'm about to enter a very crooked and adventurous journey and expedition. So I need protection and I need blessings. I'm entering into a very, very intense stuff. No? I'm trying to go deeper into a very, very intense stuff. So I need all the blessings I can have. So it's a way of conceiving. So whatever we do doesn't become, again, mechanical. Like, oh, okay, some water, and then this goes here. And we can do that in 5 seconds, like Guinness record times. But the point is where we were internally. So, I don't know, should I continue? Or how is your prana flowing? Still alive? Okay, a few words now that Samadhi has returned to the assembly. So when we speak about the name of God, no? Till now we spoke about Nam, Nami, one and the same. Aren't some special difference in favor of the name? So now let's delve a little bit into, okay, what's the name? There are different names, different types of names, and so on. So when we say the name, of course, there are so many names, but we, in our particular school of thought, will mostly point our attention to the name Krishna. Krishna, which is mentioned, that is like the central name which contains all other names of God, basically. Such as Bhagavan Sri Krishna contains within himself all other forms of God, all avatars, and the name Krishna, non-different from Krishna, contains within itself all the other names of the divine as well. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his Harinam Chintamani makes this famous distinction between Gonanam and Mukhyanam. And then will come a second sub-distinction. So Gonanam means God may have secondary names, which kind of speak about him indirectly, like the Great One, the Absolute, the Creator, or names of God. No? We are not the Great One and the Absolute, although we may like to think as such. But those names belong to him. But somehow they are not speaking about him as a person, as an individual with certain relationships of feeling, but mostly abstract as the dealer, the one who deals with the cosmos and so on, which is okay, it's on some level. But then we have Mukhyanam. Mukhyanam means, Gonanam means secondary names, Mukhyanam means primary names. So primary names are those names of God that speak about him in relation to his devotees, which highlight the personal aspect of God and the loving aspect of God reciprocating with his different servants. So that's more intimate, more personal. That's where we want to enter. We don't only want to relate with God as creator and maintainer of the universe. And this Mukhyanam, these primary names, has further two subdivisions, which are Madhurya Mai and Aishwarya Mai Mukhyanam. So Madhurya Mai means of a sweet nature, and Aishwarya Mai means of an like majestic nature. So there are some names of God which speaks about him in relation to his devotees in the context of him being God, like Narayan and so many other names that are depicted in connection to the relation he has with certain devotees, even in Vaikuntha and so on. And then Madhurya Mai Mukhyanam are the main names of God which speak about him in intimacy, the type of love that he exhibits in places like Vrindavan, Navadvip, and so on. So those are the main names that we're interested in, if you will. And Krishna is one of them, of course. Krishna means the all attractive, but also interestingly in Sanskrit the verbs can be active and passive. No? So you can, the idea can be the all attractive is like the active side, but the all the passive side will be all attracted. No? So in this case we will subscribe more for that version also. Krishna is the all attractive, but also he's all attracted by the love of Sri Radha, of Baladev, of his devotees. So Krishna is pointing at these two. Many things, of course, the name Krishna can mean so many things. But in essence has to do with this. And this name, of course, of Krishna is found in a particular equation of combinations of name that we call sometimes Krishna Nam or Maha Mantra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Which is, as we know, the Yuga Dharma, and that's why we are chanting so many times the same name. I remember once we were in Argentina recording one album, recording one kirtan, some kirtans in one studio, someone invited us. And the whole album was Maha Mantra. So there was one friend who is not a devotee, he's a musician, he invited a friend of us. So he was playing and at the end, and it was all Maha Mantra. So at one point he was kind of joking and said, oh, we have to edit one part of the song. Which part? That would say Hare Krishna. And we were laughing because we knew, well, the whole album is that. No? Which of those Hare Krishnas? So that's everywhere for in our life. Because again, that's the way to attain ultimate perfection according to Eastern, our particular form of revelation coming from the Vedas, the Kali Samtarana Upanishad, in this particular age called Kali. Kali Samtarana Upanishad means that Upanishad would reveals the way of Samtarana, of totally Samtarana, transcending the influence of Kali. Kali Santarana Upanishad reveals the Maha Mantra. Iti chudasa kam nam nam kali kalmasa nasanam nata aparatarupayo sarvavidishu drishyate. These 16 names combined this particular way are the way of transcending the influence of Kali Yuga. This has been established in the whole Veda. And then it goes Hare Krishna and so on. And of course for us at Gaudiyas, this name is not only Yuga Dharma generically, but in this particular Kali Yuga, is coming with a very special, injected influence by the presence of Mahaprabhu in the particular mood he is, but that's another series of lectures in another direction. But just to make the point, you know, that especially even if you want to speak about the name and all that we have said till now, you can add on top of that, that in this particular Kali Yuga, this Maha Mantra is coming with a very unique mood and influence from Parampara originally exploding from Mahaprabhu's heart. So we are especially fortunate because of that. So that Maha Mantra is, this Maha Mantra, this Krishna Nam, is extremely worshipable. Again, the Vedas are not only revealing the name of Krishna, but actually it is described that the Vedas themselves are worshipping the name of Krishna. There's a very nice verse that Sri Rupa Goswami reveals, another one in the Namashtakam. All of them are nice. You can study Namashtakam. Our Guru Maharaj gave a series of lectures some years ago in North Carolina about it. It says, Nikhila Shruti Mali Ratnamala Dhyati Nirajita Padapanka Janta Ajimukta Kulairu Pashyamanam Paritas Tvam Harinam Samsrayami. We recited that one in Mangalacharan. Sri Rupa Goswami says, I'm taking shelter on Srinam, on Sri Harinam, Samsrayami, full shelter in Harinam. Why? He begins saying, Nikhila Shruti Moli Ratnamala. He's saying, Shruti, the Vedas, the most ancient comprehensive form of revelation, they contain all knowledge. But which are the Nikhila Shruti Mali Ratna, which are the crest jewels in the Vedic crown, if you will. If you want to conceive the Vedas as the crown that is shedding light with very bright jewels, which is the crest jewel of the Vedas? They are the Upanishads. Mm-hmm. Remember, Upanishads, as our Guru Maharaj likes to say, means secret, no, sit close. No. Some confidential esoteric doctrine is to be revealed. So Nikhila Shruti Mali Ratna Mala. So these Upanishads present the most esoteric knowledge in comparison to the other section of the Vedas, metaphysical transcendental knowledge about the Absolute. But the point is, what are the Upanishads doing in connection to the name? Aj Nikhila Shruti Mali Ratna Mala Dutini Rajita Pada Panka Janta. The Upanishads, it's a way of putting that, are taking Pancha Pradeep, no, this five-wicked lamp, and offering arati. And when we say offering arati to Harina, Rupa Goswami say no, not to Harina in itself, but it's offering to the rays of Harinam, to the effulgence of Harinam, which is coming from the two nails of Sri Harinam. It's not even worshipping the feet directly, but it's worshipping this lightless effulgence coming from one of the tips of the two nails of one of the fingers of Harinam. Remember, Harinam is not different from Krishna, so we can speak of the lotus feet of Harinam. So all these great, famous, deep Upanishads are shedding light in that direction, and they themselves are worshipping the light that is coming from that direction, from one of the students, like implying this most apparently insignificant corner of Harinam is worshipped by the Upanishad, the old Upanishad put together. And therefore Rupa Goswami of course concludes Harinam Samshriyami. No? And Ajimukta Kulairu Pashyamanam, he says also, oh Harinam, you are worshipped by a whole assembly of muktas, of liberated personalities. No, they are all worshipping you. The Upanishads are all worshipping you, and therefore Harinam, Harinam Tams, Harinam Samsrayami. I myself worship you. I take complete shelter at your feet. And one who takes complete shelter at the feet of Sri Harinam, basically everything is included there. Hari Bhakti Vilas, Bhakti Sandar, many parts of Shastra say someone who just twice recites these two syllables, Hari, or you could say Krishna, that person has completed their study of the Vedas. That's pretty generous. Just say Hari, the whole study of the Vedas is done. No need to go through all. Of course, what does it mean to say Hari? That's another thing. That's why we are doing all this seminar. Because if not, just say Hari, okay, end of the seminar, all of us just like liberated and PhD in the Vedas, but it's not so. Take some time, but everything is there. That's the point. Everything is in the name of God, especially again in this particular age. And the emphasis is, strictly speaking, there is no need to resort to any other means for perfection than Trinam. There is a famous verse that Mahaprabhu himself loved to recite, which says, Harir Nam, Harir Nam, Harir Namaiva Kivalam, Kalo Nasti Eva, Nasti Eva, Nasti Eva, Gatiranjata. So this is a very important verse. If you're speaking about how charming is the name, the verse is not speaking about how nasty is Eva. No? As Guru Nishtha put one in one joke. I don't know if you saw them, that was nice. No? How you can be a newcomer to the temple one day and they say, oh, they have a case on Eva, no? Three times calling her nasty. That's not at all like that. No? He's speaking exactly how beautiful is Srinam and how this name three times is repeated. No? When Shastra repeats something three times means better you have this point clear because this is very important. So three times Harinam, three times Nastiyev. Nastiyev means there is no other way, no other way, no other way in Kali apart from Harinam, Harinam, Harinam. So, of course, this is not just like to take fanatically or to just, I don't know, try to repeat that copy-paste and okay, only this, only this. Everyone knows the verse, but the point is we have to play out the implications of it and live our life in such a way that we get closer to this high conclusion. Because again, how much we have realization that there's nothing, there's no need of nothing else apart of Srinam. That will come when you realize everything is in Srinam. So I don't need to go anywhere else because there's nowhere else to go apart from Srinam. Because everything, as we say in the beginning, is contained within Srinam. So in that sense, there's no need of anything else because there's nothing else apart from that. But how much do I have that realization that we need to get closer to that? So everything is there, no? Krishna is there, Mahaprabhu, his associate, his Leela. And some people sometimes lament, Krishna Leela is gone, Gaur Leela is over, and we are here now. But actually all of them are fully present in the holy name. We have to learn how to find them, basically. So anyhow, I have some other ideas to share, but I think I already extended myself today a little bit, and I wanted to make some points, so we can continue next, but of course, we can also have some minutes for questions. If someone has any question or comments or something you may like to share in this regard, this is a moment. Yeah, Bhakti Rasa.
In relation to what you were saying about, where are we? Listening to these classes by Father Thomas Keating, he was relaying a story about this this person who wanted to see God, so he went to a cave and it was raining very hard, and God was did appear at one point. But the point of the story was the question that God is always asking is, "Where are you?"
Mm-hmm.
He said throughout the whole Bible, this is God's question to us: "Where are you?"
Instead of us questioning him.
Yeah.
Where are you? He's already there. Where are we?
Yeah,
and it can be subtly transformed into some form of subtle manipulation also, like when we are chanting and expecting him appear. Where are you? Like to try to control the Absolute, who is already there. But he won't be seen or appreciated if we don't have the proper attitude to see him. And again, of course, as we will speak these days, our goal is not so much to see God, no? In the sense of where are you, no? But to to have some, what sometimes may call mystical experience. In the sense, sometimes we may chant it again with an implied list of expectations, and this should happen, and this should happen, and by the end of the japa retreat, I have to have some mystical vision and some light, color lights, or some floating guys have to appear, something. So I will appear with my night lantern and put the red light for a minute, so you're like, oh, wow, something happened. When I see you with the eye closed, I will pull like, for a moment, and you're like, oh, okay, it happened, something happened. But that's not the idea, no? You know, someone went, as you know, with Srila Prabhupada in that mood, basically, no? And someone said, you know what, Swamiji, in the very beginnings, one guest, every time I sing, because the person was singing Maha Mantra, probably along with some other substances, and the person said, every time I sing this mantra, a red light appears here. So the person thought, this is the accomplishment. And Prabhupada told, you keep chanting that the red light will disappear soon. He made the point, it's not about seeing color lights. It's about establishing divine communion with God. It's not about mystical vision. It's about divine communion, entering into a state of relationship. Not so much seeing something. Because the point is, okay, seeing something, what will you do with that seeing? Again, the question comes back, where are you? Krishna says, okay, you want to see me for what? What will you do with seeing me? It's just the price you want to attain to feel yourself good. I saw God. So I reached the goal. I am special. I saw God. Whatever. Not so many things can be hidden behind the, our so-called devotional motivations. Why do we want to seek God? For what? Mostly we have to prepare ourselves for the moment that He chooses to show Himself to us so we know what to do. Because it's not just like He's an object of my entertainment. I want to see God. Like, I want to see a movie. You know, it's not just like a Netflix series. No, oh, let's see. Oh, I saw Him. I saw God. And you won't be the same if you really see God. Someone asked once Srila Sridhar Maharaj that. No, he replies many times. And he replies in different ways, interestingly. And once when he was asked, have you seen God? He said, I was not looking for that, for seeing Him. So I don't know, maybe He was there, but I was not looking for Him. Like implying, I was not looking for seeing Him. I was looking for serving Him. I'm trying to develop. And the point is, by developing your service attitude, you are there. Where are you? You are there when you want to serve Him. And once someone asked Him, have you seen God? And He said, have you seen Krishna? He said, the Krishna I want to see is not easy to see. It's not that He wants to see Krishna. No, He wants to see a Krishna that demands everything from you. So you are preparing yourself for that audience, if you will. No? So, of course, there are ways of speaking about seeing God in legal way, but of course, I totally get the point that all this exercise of chanting is not just about seeing and just that. What does it mean, seeing? If He's an object, He becomes a tanmatra. And tanmatra means an object of my senses, a sense object. God is not a sense object. So the point is, He can be seen, but how He can be seen? Primanjana churita bhakti vilochanena, said Brahma Sankhita. When your eyes are tinged with the salve of love, then you will see. So if your eyes are tinged with the salve of love, means you are totally given into a disposition of loving service. So of course, naturally, there will be proper reciprocation, but without that, and without looking for that, why do you want to see Him? And Krishna will say, no, thank you. I'll hide myself. So there are different ways to speak about that, but the point is, yeah, I agree. If I say, I want to see God, immediately I should ask myself where I am. And where I am to see Him. I mean, I am in the proper place to see Him, or I'm just demanding seeing Him, but not demanding Him to appear, but not demanding me to be where I have to go, to deal with His appearance. That's not a joke. Again, if God appears in front of you, you may not freak out and not have a clue what to do. So, so we are preparing for that. No? And again, that won't be just seeing Him. Because there are some schools that may want just to see God. Like Santa Rasa, this beatific contemplation of the divine, somewhere in the same planet of God, as we say the other day. And they are seeing Him in the eye of trance, constantly. And that's enough for them. And okay, we respect that. That's possible in eternity. But our seeing God is not that type of seeing, basically. No? So we want to develop, yeah, the proper mood, the proper attitude, and that has to do with asking ourselves where I am. Because the more we answer to that question in a sincere, honest, comprehensive way, the more we will find, oh, He is there. He's there as much as I replied that question to myself, if you will. Because again, He's already there. It's not that He's not there. He's there. I am not there. So for me to be there, I need to ask myself where I am and where I should be. And when I am where I should be, He's there. So I was waiting for a while, but here we are, finally. So nice. No? So we have to appreciate Krishna's patience and tolerance. As once one devotee said, and Gurneesh also made another comment with that one. That sometimes we think, oh, I have to tolerate, and Krishna and Mahaprabhu demands, Tarori Vasa Hishnuna, you become more tolerant than a tree. And someone like, oof, why have to tolerate? Why that much? But the point is that God in your heart has been there from time without beginning, and He has been witnessing. I cannot tell you how many horror movies He had to swallow and still he's there. You know, he didn't leave a sign like, I'm fed up of all this. You did so much nonsense. I mean, too much. It's too much. Look for another Antaryami, another inner witness. Too much for me. Bye. No, he's still there. No. waiting. That's his role, waiting. And when we are ready, okay, he appears in his full form, our istadev. So if we sometimes feel, oh, I have to wait so much in this chanting and tolerate and nothing is going on and I'm not seeing. I mean, you have to really ask yourself, where I am? Well, with all this nonsense in my head, who I think I am to demand and complain and why you're not coming? I mean, we have to develop some willingness to also, how to say, to make our heart more mature through proper tolerance and patience. But patience doesn't mean I'm just passively waiting, doing nothing. I mean, you keep advancing in the relationship, but also you understand Krishna has his own prerogative and initiative, and I cannot just force myself into that. I have to learn the codes of, again, Atithi Seva. I have to treat the guests. What's the mood of the guests? It's not that the guests come and you adapt to the codes of home here and you do everything that we like. You are not the host if you don't say that. And if the guest is the divine, you will be just, what do you want? What do you need? Do you want to say something? I will hear. Do you want to hear something? I will speak. If not, I will not say. You will be willing to adjust to the honored guest that is coming. You know? So that's part of the implication of Trinada Pisanichi and Taruda Pisanichi. You know, how to approach, not only how to relate with others, of course, as well, but how to apply that verse in approaching that particular person so we can do Kirtaniya Sadhani. You sure you have some contribution? You raise your hand?
Yes, just connected kind of to where we are approaching Srinam and so forth. I remember one time a devotee came to the ashram. He hadn't been there in a while. And he said to Guru Maharaj, oh, like long time no see.
Long time?
Long time no see.
No see means without seeing each other.
Yeah. Just kind of like, you know, because of circumstance, or like casual. Or, and Guru Maharaj was like, I've been here. In the sense of like,
yeah,
I'm here.
The availability always remains on that side.
Yeah.
Which again, this is not to feel guilty or go neurotic. Okay, oh, Krishna is always there and he has been waiting and it's me the one who is not there. And it's all the fault, falsehood. But just in terms of responsibility, you know, and maturity and integrity, you know, and dignity, trying to deal with our own case. You know, because as we will see, Krishna cannot do our part in that sense. You know? He's doing his part, as we always said, and our part is to trust that he's doing his part. And do our part on that basis. Now, when you know who is Krishna and all that he can do and how he's actually doing that perfectly, on that basis, I have strength and support. Okay, I have to do my part. Having hope and faith that he's doing his part. He won't fail, he will protect, he will guide, he's there, and so on. Okay, on that basis, I'll do my part. Because sometimes it's difficult for us to do our part if we are not aware how much Krishna is doing his part. And we somehow feel that we have to do more than what we have to do, and we kind of take what Krishna is already doing, we try to do it ourselves, and it's not working. We are not Krishna. But when we have a clear idea of what Krishna is doing and how much he's doing that, then we can have a clear idea of what's expected from us and have the necessary inspiration to do that as well. And invest, contribute with our 50% equation, if you will, in the relationship. Again, it's a relationship, so it's reciprocate. It's not just like Krishna has to do everything. It's not a relationship, he's doing everything. It's just some dictatorship, imposition, and you don't have choice in the matter. So he's also valuing your agency and free will and expecting, okay, I'm waiting for your individuality here to be offered, as we spoke these days. So anyhow, something else before concluding today? You have some homework? So we can stop here, and if you want, we can do some little homework for tomorrow, from today to tomorrow, which one could be, of course, when we will be chanting today, tomorrow morning, before the class. Of course, there may be different focuses and things, but try to keep in mind what we have speaking today about these different points regarding Krishna being non-different from his name and how he's already there and all the things, and try to conduct your your japa opening to that side of the reality of Srinaman, and then write something about that again in your journal. Try to reflect how your own experience in connection to what we spoke today, and to the chanting in connection to what we spoke today, you know, some reflections about how you felt. And even if you like, that's an nice idea, if you will, like, you can compose a prayer of your own in connection to all this. Again, as we spoke these days, it's nice to recite others' prayers, but also it's nice to explore ourselves and compose a prayer of our own, trying to make it as personal as we can, in connection to Krishna being not only identical with the name, but the name being especially fortunate, generous, and already present there in our lives. So we can do that today. And tomorrow is Sunday. So tomorrow we won't have the typical lecture we are having with me here, because tomorrow is the day that our Guru Maharaj is giving his well-known Swami calls. And he agreed generously to speak tomorrow on some topic in connection to what we are speaking this day. So he will be part of the retreat. He's already there. So he will be speaking on prayer tomorrow. So that will be the same time of the Swami call, which is 9:30 here. So maybe we can get the computer here and see it all together. And that will be part of the retreat as well. And then on the next day, on Monday, we will continue exploring some different points in connection to Srinath. So thanks so much for your time. Srila Gurudev ki jai, Sriman Mahaprabhu ki jai, Sri Harinam Sankirtan ki jai, Sri Sri Dauji Gopal ki jai, Gaur Bhaktavrinda ki jai, Gaur Premanand.